Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. This programme looks into the Bond phenomenon with Pat Hughes, a Bond fanatic. I hope you enjoy the show. As you might have guessed from that intro music, this is a Bond special. 25 Bond films in how many years?
Was it 62, the first one? So that would be like 40, 50?
60 years.
60 years.
60 years this year. 25 films made in 60 years. It's amazing. It's probably the longest running series of films.
Yeah.
In the history of...
I think it must be.
Yeah, it must be. It must be. And you're probably wondering who the other voice is here. Well, this is Pat Hughes, who I work with, and he happens to be a Bond fanatic. So I said, well, why don't we discuss the Bond legacy and the films that are included in it? And that first piece of music you heard was, of course, the original Bond music written by John Barry, and Vic Flick playing the guitar, ding-diddling-ding-ding, from that first film, Dr. No. And can you imagine, when they made Dr. No, they had no idea
no.
what they were unleashing, really. So now we've set to, for ease of access, because we're not going to be mentioning all Bond films, but we're going to be going through quite a few of them. The first thing I wanted to ask Pat was, what's your favourite Bond film?
There are obviously loads and loads of really, really great Bond films, but the one that stands out for me, and always has done, is The Spy Who Loved Me.
Which was Roger Moore, right?
Roger Moore's, I think it was his third Bond film.
Uh-huh. What is it about this one that is so outstanding?
I think, for me, I can remember being a young kid and having it, recording it, you know, taped it off the telly, and just watching it over and over and over again. There's so many different elements to it that end up being brilliant. The gadgets are brilliant. The locations are brilliant. The baddies are brilliant. Well, one specific baddie anyway. The Bond girl's fantastic. I think being, you know, what year was it? 1977, I think. And I must have watched it in the early 80s after it had come on TV. I think as a small kid, 7-8 years old, it just...
You might have watched it 77 times.
Probably, quite possibly.
Well, we're obviously going to go into more of this. I mean, that's a good general description of why it means so much to you. I've got a few things here which I found out which you might be interested. And the cinematography, which is excellent, because I saw it recently just to catch up with you on this. The cinematography is by Claude Renoir.
Right.
And you may or may not know that he was the nephew of Jean Renoir, the fantastic French director.
Ah.
Now, the super tanker set,
yes,
when a lot of action goes on there, Claude Renoir's eyesight was failing him, and actually Stanley Kubrick did the lighting.
Yes,
for
I
all
think
the
I
stuff
have read
inside,
that. Yes.
Inside the super tanker, which is amazing. It was the last movie Elvis Presley watched.
Really?
Yep.
Was it also the first use of the Bond soundstage at Pinewood?
You got me there.
I think it might have been built for this film.
Spy who loved me is keeping
Okay, Pat, my next thing I want to know from you is what in your opinion is the worst Bond movie?
Well, I mean, it's probably a bit of a cliche amongst Bond fans, but I have to really go with Quantum of Solace. It lacks all those Bond characteristics that you need in a Bond film: the gadgets, the Q, the mission.
Comedy?
The comedy. You need a bit of slapstick, a little bit of
lightness.
Yeah, light entertainment, light humour in there. It doesn't. I think probably as an action film, it's good. I probably need to watch it again to give it a bit more justice. But it's part of that Daniel Craig canon. And it doesn't have that beginning, classic Bond beginning, middle, end.
Right.
And that's what I like about Bond. I like the standaloneness.
Right, like a three-act play.
Yeah, and each movie you can just kind of dip in and dip out. And you don't need to watch them all in sequence.
Well, most movies have a sort of a three-act setup, the good ones. And Quantum of Solace obviously doesn't have that. Yeah. Now, you know, it's the most expensive Bond movie ever. $225 million.
Wow.
$225 million. And it was the only Bond movie to have a foot chase, a car chase, a plane chase, and a boat chase. My next question is going to be, who, in your opinion, made the best James Bond?
Well, I don't know whether this is a controversial answer or not, but I always felt that Timothy Dalton was my favourite Bond.
He only made two films.
He only made two films. Connery, I think, did six. Moore did seven. Pierce Brosnan did four. And Daniel Craig did five. Does that add up? I think that's right. But he... Timothy Dalton, he brought back... After the sort of humour elements of Roger Moore, which I really love.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton brought back a harder edge.
There interesting. Was
a, you know, he. I guess he had that... Royal Shakespeare trained actor side to him. And he, I just really like him as a Bond. And I don't necessarily think that the two films that he's in are the two best films.
No, exactly.
But I think he would have been a great Bond. And I think he maybe was supposed to start one Bond
earlier.
Film early.
You're absolutely right. I mean, he turned down on Her Majesty's Secret Service and several others.
Right.
They always had him in his in their mind after Sean Connery. And you know why he didn't? They offered him the part, and he said, "I'm too young." That was the reason why he kept turning it down. And I guess when it got to...
Well, that's very ironic, because I've read this week that the Bond producers are thinking about having, for the new Bond, the post-Daniel Craig Bond, a younger Bond.
There you go. So it's amazing that he turned down one of the biggest parts in movie business because he said, no, I'm too young to be playing the spy. It's ludicrous. And the other, I've got a couple of interesting things here. Christopher Reeve turned down the part.
Really?
You know, the Superman actor. Sam Neill auditioned.
Sam Neill.
The Australian actor.
From New Zealand, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think.
And then they also thought about Piers Brosnan, but he was doing Remington Steele.
He was doing
Steel
Remington Steele, wasn't he?
He
was locked in.
He couldn't do both.
Yeah.
Okay, so Pat, the worst James Bond.
All right, well, this is controversial because when you read the polls, I know that this Bond comes very high on the list. Yeah. But for me, the worst Bond is Lazenby.
George Lazenby.
On Your Majesty's Secret Service, it's a film that it never, ever...
That's the only one he made, right?
It was the only one he made. It just didn't really connect with me. Maybe the parallels with Austin Powers are a little bit high.
Yeah.
There's a terrible dubbed scene where he's playing a scientist and he didn't do the voice. They got someone else to do the voice for him.
Right.
It just doesn't connect with me. Huh. Maybe if he'd have done more movies...
Well, he was signed up for six more after this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what happened was that he wasn't really enjoying it that much, and then his agent, apparently, this is what I read, convinced him that Bond was becoming passé and he should move on because it was dying.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
So he got out there. They
time
said
for a
they
new agent.
Convinced him it'd run out of steam. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So he got out of the contract.
Wow.
Six more. So you're glad. I mean, maybe he'd have got better if.
Yeah,
if,
yeah.
If he'd done that. Who knows? On Her Majesty's Secret Service is Christopher Nolan's favourite Bond film, and he's been suggested as a director for a couple. Now, the original Batman, Adam West, was offered the role.
Wow.
And this was the first film after Sean Connery. Okay, so who's your favourite Bond villain?
Now this is easy for me because I go back to my favourite Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. And my favourite is henchman Jaws.
Richard Keel.
Absolutely
fabulous.
Terrified me as a kid.
Fabulous.
Terrified. I mean, that opening scene where he goes to see Stromberg and he does the big smile and the teeth are revealed.
You see the teeth.
And, oh, wow, absolutely terrified by that.
Yeah,
So he is always my favourite Bond villain by a long way.
And he came back in Moonraker, didn't
That's
he?
That's right, yeah, a bit of a change of character.
They thought he'd get eaten by the shark, but he was so popular... that they decided he should survive.
Yeah, well, he's such a great character. Yeah, so yeah. Iconic.
Giant, an absolute giant. Yeah. Probably over 7 foot, wasn't
he? I think
he,
yeah, 7'4" or something like that.
I mean, when he's fighting with Bond, you see he's got massive his hand is as big as Roger Moore's head.
Yeah, train scene is the one where he slaps him right in the face. It's like a face hugger.
Yeah. Now, the famous metal teeth you just talked about, they are in the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C., so you can go and see these teeth.
Yeah, have you seen them? I've seen them in another. There was a Bond exhibition that travelled round about 7 years ago, and they had them there. They look. I mean, I've read how terribly uncomfortable they were for Richard Kiel, and they look horrible.
Yeah. Now, in Moonraker, because that's the other film he was
that's
in.
Right, yeah.
I found out that skydive sequence.
Oh yeah.
That was real, and it required 88 jumps.
Blimey.
To do it, because the sequence is like a 2-minute scene.
Yeah, at the beginning.
But in order to get enough bits of footage for the 2 minutes, they had to do it 88 times.
Wow.
Which is quite an amazing feat. And the budget Moonraker was $30 million, which at the time was more than the combined budgets of all the other 8 previous Bond movies, which is quite amazing. Now, I mean, I'm with you on this. I love the Jaws and Richard Kiel, but strictly speaking, he's a henchman. But he's not the villains are like Goldfinger, Blofeld. So, of all those other ones, is there one that rings a bell for you?
I do like Scaramanga, Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee, yeah.
Scaramanga.
In
The Man with the Golden Gun. He is the man with the golden gun. I think he's a great character. He's so cool, calm and collected, never gets flustered.
Yeah.
And again, it's a bit of a different Bond villain. He's not trying to take over the world.
Right.
I really like Scaramanga.
A thousand dreams felt your
And what about the worst Bond villain?
The worst Bond villain, for me... Now, there's been several appearances, but I'm going to go with Blofeld, but not Blofeld just generally as a character,
no.
But specifically Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever.
I think by Charles Gray.
Charles Gray was the actor.
Yeah.
It's so camp.
Yeah.
He's like Dick Emery, really. Yeah. You just can't take him seriously at all.
No.
So even though I do like the film, I must say, I do enjoy the film. But yeah, as a Bond villain, he's just got no terror in him at all.
Huh. Okay. You know, Gert Frobe, who played Goldfinger, he to me is one of the standout of villains,
yes.
Real villains, star villains. Now, they were floating the idea of him coming back as Goldfinger's twin brother for this.
Really?
Instead of Charlie. I don't know what happened. Didn't happen. Now, and this one was due to be Diamonds Are Forever, we're talking about, yeah? And it was due to be Lazenby's next Bond film.
Mm.
Burt Reynolds was the original choice as
was
replacement.
He really?
The people that have turned down, have been thought, suggested as Bonds, is amazing.
Yeah,
the
I
list.
Didn't know that, yeah.
Burt Reynolds... John Gavin was also on the list. And Michael Gambon, you know, the singing detective.
Yeah.
They also invited him.
Blimey.
You know. I have to say, actually, that when Christopher Reeve was offered it, he said that it should be played by an Englishman, which is quite a nice comment. Diamonds Are Forever, a couple of other interesting bits of useless information. Most of it was shot at night.
Mm.
And it was mostly shot in the America because they wanted to win back the American audience that they'd lost after on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Right.
So they said, let's shoot the rest. Most
it's Vegas.
Of it in
a lot
America.
Of Vegas in it.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need. Please me, they can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever. Hold one up and then caress it. Touch it, stroke it, and then. I can see every part, nothing hides in the heart to hurt me. I don't need love, for what good will love do me? Diamonds never lie to me, for when love's gone, they last on. Diamonds are forever, sparkling around my little finger. Unlike men, the diamonds linger.
Okay, next on my list is a best Bond girl.
Well, again, there's a theme running here, but I'm going to go back to The Spy Who Loved Me.
Wow.
And Barbara Bach as Agent Triple X. She, not only is she, you know, smoking hot, but she's...
What's she got that Ursula Andress didn't
well,
have
she,
from Dr. No?
She matches Bond. She's got gadgets.
She's got her own thing.
You know, she's not afraid to stand up and have a fight.
Good point.
You know, she is Bond's equal, if you like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Working for the Russians.
Good point. That's a nice touch, isn't it?
Yeah. I think to be a really classic Bond girl, you need to have that element of being a spy and being able to hold your own, if you like.
Yeah,
and she certainly does.
Yeah.
She's, you know, outsmarting him and he's outsmarting her.
Yeah.
They do have got a good chemistry.
Yeah, there's a chemistry, isn't there, between them in that film. And now I share a birthday with her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 28th of August.
Oh.
Now, she started out in Italian giallo films, which are the serial killers on motorbikes with black helm in black leather, you know, films in the early 70s. And interesting enough, she starred with two other Bond girls, Claudine Auger and Barbara Boucher, in a film called The Black Belly of the Tarantula. In 1973. And because she spoke with a Russian accent in the film, A Spy Who Loved Me, everyone assumed she was European.
I did. I've got to say.
She's very good at it.
Absolutely convinced.
And she speaks fluent Italian, I think. And she never got... She got typecast and she never got cast in any American film.
No, I don't think I've seen her
in any
other film.
Always European. But her father was a policeman in Queens, New York.
Ah.
That's where she comes from. And he then became a costume jeweller in the film business in LA, her father.
Yeah.
Now, she recommended Grace Jones to the producers for A View to a Kill.
Mm.
Now, Grace Jones is sort of a mix of a Bond baddie and a Bond girl,
isn't she? Yeah, she is.
Okay, who is your worst Bond girl?
Well, worst Bond girl, I'm going to go with Stacey Sutton from A View to a Kill, played by Tanya Roberts, who I think unfortunately passed earlier this year.
Right.
Yeah, as a character, I don't think she really does anything in the whole film.
Right.
There's a lot of screaming. she does fire the shotgun at one point, but I don't think it's even got proper bullets in it. I think that's... yeah, she just... she doesn't have the pizzazz, the fire that
of
all those other Bond girls. Maybe it was just bad writing, but yeah, just she does nothing for me.
Now, View to a Kill, which is the film she was in, it was the first Bond song to reach number one.
Oh.
Roger Moore's least favourite of his Bond films.
Well, he was pretty old when he did it, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he was... he did
his last one.
It was his last one. I think he was 58 when he did it.
Yes,
And you can see that he's not in... He's pretty much not in any of the action scenes.
No.
You can tell couldn't that it's the stuntman.
Yeah. And Christopher Walken, good or bad villain?
Oh, yeah, he is a great villain.
He's very young, though, at
the
time,
wasn't he? He is a good villain with quite a good little backstory as well. I think he's good. He is good, actually. Yeah, I've forgotten about him.
And is his role Max Zorin?
Yeah, he's Zorin.
Okay, now, Rutger Hauer was offered the part.
Well, that you can see the similarities.
That would have worked,
wouldn't it? The bleached blonde hair.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
Now, according to Bond experts, you probably know this, it's apparently a reworking of the plot from Goldfinger. And John Glenn, the director, he claimed that Tanya Roberts was the most beautiful girl he'd ever worked with.
Oh, so
there you go,
John.
There's a compliment from the director.
With the gifts of the time in the world. Just for love, nothing more, nothing less. Only love.
Okay, what's the best Bond gadget of all time?
Well, my favourite Bond gadget, once again, Spy Who Loved Me.
Ah.
It's got to be the Lotus submarine. I think I had two different versions of it as a kid. I had a bigger version about the size of a mobile phone and had a little matchbox version.
Okay.
The bigger version, the wheels would turn in, you
and
press a button
fins
and the fins
out?
Come out.
Oh, really?
One of my favourite toys.
The big one or the small
the,
toy?
The big one. The small one was just permanently in submarine, cast. But it had wheels underneath it so you could roll it around.
Wow, you've still got the big one? Probably worth
know.
A lot of money.
Probably
now.
Is if it was boxed, but it wouldn't have been boxed by me as 7 years old. It would have been straight out of the packet and driving around the floor. I love that. It's just it's so iconic. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Well, the White Lotus in itself, but the fact that it turns into a submarine.
And when it comes out of the water on that beach is great, isn't it?
In Sardinia, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, another amazing thing I found is that it was bought at auction in 2013. But there were, they had half a dozen of these.
Right, yeah.
Because
they had
to do
a few,
for different scenes, like the scene where the fins come out, they had one for that scene. And to cover the different scenes, they needed six. And actually, none of them actually worked.
No.
And where the car is driving underwater, as there are two scuba divers pulling it along. They see you can see the bubbles coming up.
Yeah.
But obviously we think there's bubbles from inside the car. And the cars actually fill up with water when they're doing that.
Oh, okay.
And what happened was that after the film, it was the one, the most complete one, which is the one that was underwater and a complete car, it was put in a lock-up container and just left there.
Right.
For years and years and years. And then they finally opened it up and auctioned it in 2013. And can you imagine who bought it?
I know who bought it.
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk, the
for
modern...
£616,000.
The modern-day Bond villain himself.
There you go.
I think it was nicknamed Wet Nelly.
That's right,
Because the original Little Nelly was the gyrocopter from You Only Live Twice, I think.
A cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel.
kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold.
The worst Bond gadget.
Well, they're all great, the gadgets, but I'm going to go with the prosthetic nipple from Man with the Golden Gun in that film, Scaramanga, Christopher Lee Scaramanga, the way that he can be identified, or he's not identified. Nobody knows what he looks like in the film, apart from that the only information that anybody has is that he has three nipples. So right. That so Bond can imitate and pretend to be Scaramanga. He Q Branch develops the prosthetic nipple, which when he's finished with it, he just chucks it in the bushes.
It doesn't actually do anything, does it?
No, it doesn't do anything.
Well, I mean, in that case, we can't strictly call it a gadget. So come on, something else.
Okay, in that, all right, let's go for something else. Okay, well, I suppose if you're Bond 007, you're a spy, a British spy. You're supposed to be a secret agent, yet in Moonraker, Roger Moore drives a gondola that turns into a hovercraft and drives it all the way around St. Mark's Square in Venice.
Yeah.
The least conspicuous Bond vehicle probably ever made.
Yes. okay, and now this gondola hovercraft... the scene where it turns into a where the gondola turns yeah. into a hovercraft, they needed to do it six times because the vehicle was so unstable. Roger Moore fell out five times, and he had a new silk suit on every time. So that to
really?
And on the sixth take, they got it right, and they didn't have it. That was the last silk suit. and Jaws is again in this, right?
Yeah, in Moonraker, yeah.
Yeah, and in both films that Jaws was in, he bites through metal, and in fact it was licorice. So he obviously, Richard Kiel obviously likes
there's
licorice.
Oh, the cable car cable that he bites through.
Then in,
yeah,
and then through the lock chain.
That's right, yeah.
That's why I love him. now, this film, Moonraker, was... The Man with the Golden Gun, going back to prosthetic nipple, the lowest body count for a Bond film. Only six.
Russia with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you. I've traveled the world to learn. Must return from Russia with love. I've seen places, faces, and smiled for a moment, but so still my tongue tied, young pride would not let my love for you show. In case you'd say no, to Russia I flew, but they're a man. I suddenly knew you'd care again. My running around is through. I fly to you from Russia with love.
Okay, Pat, hit me with your best Bond location.
Well, I've got two locations, both from the same film.
Right.
Moving forward into the Brosnan era, the first Pierce Brosnan film, Goldeneye. There's that amazing scene at the beginning with the bungee jump over the dam. I think it's in Switzerland.
It's awesome, isn't it? Stunning.
It's such a great shot, the wide shot of that.
Yeah.
And then, again, the same film later on, I remember seeing this in the cinema and just being in awe of this, the giant satellite dish. Yeah. I researched it. I think it's in Costa Rica.
Arecibo Observatory, yeah.
Right. I think they blew it up not that long ago, a few years ago, it's in Costa Rica. Again, just an amazing real life thing for a Bond.
Yeah.
You'd think you'd see a giant satellite dish like that coming out of the ground. That's got to be a model or something like that. But it actually, was a real thing. So yeah, I love those two. Those two scenes just look amazing as locations.
Yeah, and bungee jump. It was the highest bungee jump from a structure in a film.
Oh, is it?
722 feet.
Wow.
And Piers Brosnan, he's got a fear of heights, so some of the scenes in the observatory he couldn't do, so a body double came in to do those. Now, apparently, the plot of Goldeneye is almost identical to True Lies, James Cameron's film about a globe-trotting secret agent played by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
And that was released around the same time.
Yeah.
So bizarre that they're identical plots. Thinks that there'd be a lawsuit going on there between one or the other, but they seem to have sorted it out. Now, there's a six-year gap after License to Kill before this, so quite a long time.
Yeah.
And so it was the most successful Bond movie to come out since Moonraker in 79. It was the most successful, probably because of that layoff. Now, again, people who were asked...
Oh, yeah, go on.
For this one, Paul McGann...
Really?
And Liam Neeson were in line for Bond. If Brosnan had turned it down for some reason. Now, John Woo was offered the job to direct it.
Right. Well, that would have been a different film, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And the Rolling Stones were offered to perform the title song.
Right. Is that the one that is written by Bono and the Edge?
That's it. Tina Turner.
Tina Turner, yeah.
Behind, you'll never know tears, the tears I've cried. But now my time has come, and time, time is not on your side. See him move through smoke and mirrors, feel his presence in the crowd. Other girls, they gather around him. If I had him, I wouldn't let him out. Golden eye, not lace or leather. Golden chain, take him to the spot. Golden eye, I'll show him forever. It'll take forever to see what I've got. You'll never know the shadows as a child. You'll never know how it feels to get so close and be denied. It's a gold and honey trap I got for you tonight. Revenge, it's a kiss this time.
Okay, worst Bond location.
Is there such a thing as a worst Bond location? They're always amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, but most of
I'm going to go with a location that's been used several times in Bond films, and not as a location in general, but more from a scene from a film. And I'm going to go with Nassau in the Bahamas, which has been used quite a few times. I think it's... I think Dr. No was the first time it was used.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to go with the underwater scenes in Thunderball.
Right.
They're just very slow and very dull.
Yeah.
And they don't really offer much. And I think the reason why they hung, that those underwater scenes are so long, is that at the time I've read that the underwater cameras were the new technology, and they were just showing off new technology. Look,
yeah,
how long
I see
we
what
can
you
film
mean.
Underwater for.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but as a visual really spectacle, it just becomes a bit dull. Yeah, there's another one as well that, again, just becomes a bit dull and overused or rehashed, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that is the Alps, I think it's Austrian Alps, from Spectre, that scene, the ski chase. I mean, there's some good action. That, you know,
we've seen it all before.
But we've seen skiing, we've seen the snow many times.
Yeah.
It was a bit, oh, can't you come up with something a bit different?
Yeah. I mean, this film cost $300 million to make.
Wow.
And Daniel Craig made $25 million. You'd think that they could have jazzed up. I mean, they could have done powder skiing in Paraguay as an alternative somewhere else. So it's crazy. Where did all this money go? But Spectre's made history. It's the largest stunt explosion near the end of the film.
Yeah.
And the man who set it up, the stunt coordinator, said, I quote, "It was complicated to plan and pull off, but it was more than worth it." And this reminds me of a shoot I was on where we made a movie for a song called Nuclear Device, and we were in Portugal, and we had a guy there, a munitions expert, to do a couple of explosions. And I have to tell you, he got so excited when these things went off that he actually went behind the bushes and jerked one out, pulled one out, rubbed one out.
Well, I suppose if you love your job.
Now, for Spectre, Radiohead got a song called Spectre.
Right, I don't know that.
Yeah, they considered using that, but they thought it was too dark.
Right.
So they ended up with Sam Smith.
I've been near before, but always hit the floor. I've spent a lifetime running, and I always get away. But with you I'm feeling something that makes me wanna stay. I'm prepared for this. I never shoot to miss, but I feel like a storm is coming. If I'm gonna make it through the day, then there's no more use in running. This is something I gotta face.
Okay, what's the best Bond theme? It's hard because there have been so many good ones.
There have been so many good ones, but there, I think there really is one standout one, and that's going to be McCartney.
And Wings.
McCartney and Wings, yeah, with Live and Let Die.
Pretty good.
Yeah, amazing. Guns N' Roses covered it, didn't they? And they did a really good job. A very, you know, pretty straight up cover as well, just a bit harder edged.
Yeah.
It's just such a brilliant, it's a brilliant feel, a brilliant theme.
Emotive.
Yeah. I think, is it co-written with George Martin? I think it is co-written with George Martin. Yeah, it's just great.
Now, they offered Sean Connery $5.5 million to do Live and Let Die, which he turned down. And then Clint Eastwood. Even Clint got offered it. Now, he like Christopher Reeve, said, no, it should be done by an Englishman, which is interesting. And The Crocodile Run took 6 takes to do. And Ross Kananga, who owned the place where they filmed
the farm,
it, he did the jump.
Yes, yeah,
and he
yeah.
ended up with 193 stitches in his leg and face.
Wow.
After doing all the takes, you know, and they fell in and they bit him and he ended up with all those injuries.
God.
Incredible. These things we don't know about. So let's have a bit of Macca now.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live. If this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
And the worst Bond theme, we're obviously not going to play it.
No. Well, my least favourite, shall I say, is Madonna and her tune for Die Another Day, which is not a great Bond film either.
No. What about Another Way to Die? That's pretty bad. From Quantum of Solace, that's pretty bad too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not very good. The more recent Bond films have not been that great. This bit of the Bond themes have not been that great. There's a few exceptions. I do like Chris Cornell's Know My Name from Casino Royale.
Yeah.
That's a good one. It ties in really nicely with the end of that movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we won't play either of those. We'll pick something else that's a bit more tuneful and a bit more interesting to listen to. And so, well, it's been great talking to you, Pat, about
Bond. Yeah, really good fun.
And I'm amazed at how much you know about it. I mean, there's so much information about the Bond films. I think that You know, they I'm seeing a few of them recently in line with doing this. I think they've fallen into the obvious trap of being self-aware of what they're doing.
Mm.
And the early ones, they didn't know that it was going to be a big chain of films, you know, one after another, and it was going to be such a big thing.
Mm.
So they were more concentrating on making a great little movie.
Yeah.
You know, and then as things went on, it got bigger and bigger, they become aware of what they're doing. And then they're not thinking so freely. Do you know what I mean? There are more constraints, I think.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Well, there are certain tick boxes now, isn't there, with a Bond film?
Yeah.
But not only that, which is fine. There are things that I would expect from a Bond film.
Yeah.
But I think there's this notion now that we have to... The next one has to be bigger and better than the last and more bombastic than the last one.
Mm.
And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case.
No. Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's been great talking to you about this, and let's go out with Thunderball.
He always runs while others walk. He asks talk. He looks at this world and wants it all. So he strikes like thunderbolt. He knows the meaning success. His needs are more, so he gives less. They call him the winner who takes all, and he strikes like thunder. Any woman he wants, he'll get. He will break any heart without regret. His days of asking are all gone. His fight goes on, and on. But he thinks that the fight is worth it all. So he strikes like thunder.